Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today we talk gardening with Roberta Clark. She's a horticulturist and entomologist. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, so it has been cool and damp, now cool and dry.
Yes. You know, the usual yo-yo of Cape Cod spring weather, although this has been a very cool spring. I remember saying to someone, I loved these temperatures back in February. They were great, but by the time I got to April and May, I really wanted something warmer.
Exactly,
tomorrow.
Right, yes. And are we past our frost date now?
Well, I never like to give a hard and fast frost date. I recall one year at the demonstration garden in Falmouth, we had a frost on June 6th, not to discourage people. I had my tomatoes under a clear ventilated plastic hoop. So they were fine, but other things were affected. I frankly planted my tomatoes last Tuesday, so
you did. Wow.
Chilly weather, you know, they're surviving just fine.
866-999-4626 is our number this morning for your garden questions, comments, or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. That was one of the things I was going to ask you about is I usually wait until Memorial Day to plant my tomatoes, but seeing that you have put yours in, is you think it's okay to put them in now, right?
Well, if you can wait, I think it's fine. Memorial Day is Sunday or Monday, so it's not that far off. I do it because I work on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays, so I have to cram everything in on my days off, including, you know, errands and that sort of stuff. And it was a nice day. The tomatoes I had grown from seed were starting to get leggy. And I said, you know what? I'm just putting them in. And they're fine.
Taking a chance, yeah. So this is always a tough question is as you're looking at all of the options for what tomatoes you might plant, how do you choose? I know you plant a lot of tomatoes. I plant like 3 to 6.
Yes, 24 on Tuesday. I'm determined this year I will have good tomatoes. Last year, the rabbits or the rats or whatever got most of them, and I had very poor crop. So I'm fencing in with a new type of fencing this year. I look for a flavor. I specifically grow San Marzano tomatoes because I like to do a lot of processing of tomatoes at the end of the summer, and normally it lasts me through the winter. This year, I didn't have enough to make more than 5 pints, so I look for heirlooms that I've grown in the past that I've had good success with. I include a few standard tomatoes, just sort of my just-in-case type of strategy. And I've reduced the number of cherry tomatoes I'm growing. I mean, I tend to be overwhelmed with cherry tomatoes, so I'm lowering the number of different varieties I'm growing. But I still have maybe 4 or 5.
Wow. I usually plant one just because I like to have the cherry tomatoes out there. Just so when I'm out in the garden, I can just pop them in my mouth.
Oh, exactly.
I don't even
hardly
bring them in the house.
You know, and when I do process my tomatoes, it's not strictly San Marzano's. It's whatever's ripe goes into the pot and gets cooked down, including cherries.
Ah. Now, heirloom versus hybrid.
Well, the advantage to hybrids are that they tend to be more uniform in their growth. They tend to be more disease-resistant than heirlooms, although that's not true of all of them, but of many of them. And they're good tomatoes. The heirlooms are definitely not the most productive sometimes. They tend to be not uniform in their growth, but their flavor is usually spectacular. And there's such a wide range of them. I really enjoy them. They're also generally not disease resistant. So, You have to be careful about keeping the foliage dry, allowing for good air circulation, and starting fairly early in the cycle of using some sort of disease preventative material, either organic or chemical fungicide, because they are prone to early blight, which can, in a bad year, wipe out your crop.
That's for sure, yeah. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. You mentioned rabbits. I seem to have more rabbits in my yard than I usually do. Possibly a good year for rabbits? I don't know.
Well, I thought last year I was overrun with rabbits. And you know the old saying about how rabbits reproduce. They are everywhere this year. My hostas were the first thing they attacked. The hostas are now coming back. They ate my Casablanca lilies and a couple of other lilies. They nibble on everything. One of the tomatoes I planted, it was a small seedling, so I can replace it, was eaten. I have to get that fence up. That's one of my tasks today. I actually bought plastic fencing. It looks, excuse me, it looks like snow fencing, only it's green. It's not that horrid bright orange. And it's 4 feet tall, but I'm cutting it down in half to 2 feet because rabbits are basically broad jumpers, not high jumpers. And I'm ringing each of my raised beds with it, holding it in place with bamboo stakes. And so far, I've got two beds that I've planted with things that rabbits find very tasty, and not a single rabbit has been able to get in there. So goal is to have all my beds surrounded by this fencing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Usually the rabbits don't bother me because they usually just hang out in the grass and eat the clover. But my hostas have suffered a little this year, not only from rabbits, but slugs. I cannot believe the amount of slugs that I have.
It's been very wet up until this past week.
So what's a good way, is there a good natural way to get rid of slugs?
Well, some people employ diatomaceous earth. Not the kind you get from swimming pool companies, but the one that are developed for horticultural uses, and many garden centers sell it. It does have to be reapplied after heavy rains, but it does work. Sometimes wood ashes can be used to ring around the hosta, and that will help. But again, all of these materials generally need to be reapplied after rain or irrigation, so it's sort of constant vigilance.
How about copper tape?
I don't know anything about that. I have seen it and have heard that the slugs do not like to go over it. There's some sort of electrical charge that develops, but I really don't know if it's effective. Hmm.
I might have to try it and let you know.
Yes, I'd like that. You do the experiment.
We have an email. 2 years ago, I planted several, is it fritillaria bulbs? The first year, they were very short without blossoms. This year, they are much taller, but still without blossoms. Does it take several years for them to mature, or am I barking up the wrong stem? Also, my alliums have blossoms, but their leaves have already started to turn yellow. Is that normal?
On the second question with the alliums, yes, that is normal. As they begin to send up their beautiful flower shoot, the leaves always turn yellow and start to just senesce. So it's often recommended that when you plant your alliums, you have other plants around them that will mask that unsightly foliage. So that's entirely normal. As to the fritillarias, they should be blooming. My question would be whether or not the foliage was allowed to ripen. I mean, much like tulips and daffodils, you have to let the foliage stay on the plant and photosynthesize until it begins to turn yellow and becomes, you know, totally unsightly. It will be unsightly for a while, but you need to allow that to remain because that's how the bulb replenishes itself. So if the foliage of the fritillaria had been cut back too early, that could impair the ability of the bulb to produce a flower the following year.
Yeah. You mentioned tulips, and I get so annoyed with the squirrels. I don't understand why they just, it's not like they eat the tulip. They seem to nip it and just take the head off of it. They do the same thing with my crocus and have
they do the same thing
daffodils.
With rhododendrons.
Oh, it's terrible. And, I don't have my dog anymore. My dog used to chase the squirrels out of the yard.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen as much. But now that I don't have the dog, I'm finding that the squirrels are taking over.
Yes, it's a constant battle with the critters in the garden. And it's, squirrels and rabbits and chipmunks and rats. We have to accept
that
we have rats on Cape Cod.
Lots of them.
We're not a big city, but we have rats. We're the country rats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and last year I had the problem with the rats in my tomatoes. I'm hoping not so much this year, keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I'm hoping the snow fencing will keep them out. They could go through I had like a green metal mesh fencing last year, but the squares were over an inch in diameter. And I think the rats and the chipmunks just went right through it. With this snow fencing, the little openings are barely a half an inch.
Oh, that'd be interesting to see. So the garden centers are super busy. A lot of people are interested in gardening this year.
Well, yes. As you know, I work part-time at one of our fine local garden centers, and I've been working there part-time every spring since I retired in 2012. I have never seen it this busy in all the years I've been working there. And it's nonstop from the time that the gates open in the morning until they close in the afternoon. Steady stream. Plants fly off the shelf. A good example is zinnias came in last week on a Wednesday. There were none left on Thursday.
Wow.
Cucumbers seem to be a big one, particularly pickling cucumbers. We get in many, many trays, and within a matter of days, most of our shipments come in midweek. By the weekend, they're gone.
That's amazing.
So, yes, I think a lot of people, both longtime gardeners and first-time gardeners, are planning to have big vegetable gardens this year and flower gardens. I think that's great.
Yeah, no, it's great. And, I have to say, I had not been into a store since, mid-March. Recently, I did go into a couple of the garden centers. They are doing an amazing job. They're at
yes.
least in Falmouth, requiring masks.
Yes.
There's distancing. They're wiping down the carts. They have done, and pretty much everything is outside.
Yes.
I wish they would talk to the grocery stores and tell them how to do it, because they really are doing a great job.
They are. I've been to a couple of different places, as I am want to do in the springtime. Not as many as I normally go to, but... And one small organic nursery in Dennisport that I go to, Matt's Organics, is only doing curbside pickup. So you order online. They will email you when your order is ready. You park in a designated parking spot, give them a call, and they bring it out to you. So
that's
there's
great.
No contact whatsoever. You don't get out of your car until they've walked away. Where I work, masks are required. There are plexiglass shields by the cash registers. We've turned the large greenhouse into a strictly one-way. We've totally rearranged all the benches. Everything is one-way. You enter at one end of the greenhouse and go out the other end. There are markings on the ground for six-foot spacings leading into the cash registers. There's hand sanitizers. Everyone's being especially careful.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's very important. I mean, we want to continue gardening. We want to have availability of these plants. We want our favorite garden centers to remain open. People also have to be patient with us. in many of the garden centers, they're short-staffed. I know we are. Mm-hmm. There are certain key employees who, for health reasons or whatever, were unable to come back. So a lot of the retail outlets are short-staffed. So we just ask customers to be patient with us. You know, right. We will try to provide you with, you know, the services that you're used to, but it might take a little longer.
Right. A little extra time to look around.
Exactly.
Yeah. Christine is giving us a call from Oak Bluffs. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning.
Good
How
morning.
How are you? I want to get back to critter conversation.
Sure.
So I live right in town in Oak Bluffs, so right near the campgrounds, very busy area, a lot of houses sort of close together. And, you know, I was up the other morning, could not sleep. It was before the sun came up. I was out on my front porch having my coffee, saw this silhouette coming up my street right in the middle of, I call it Gotham. And it wasn't a skunk, it wasn't a raccoon, a dog, a cat. And I'm like, that looks like a hedgehog. No, I don't know what the heck that thing is. Made a beeline up my driveway, crashed under my fence, which literally has maybe a 3-inch space, went back into my yard in the back, in the garden, where I have a fish pond, and completely decimated my pond. It was an otter.
Otter,
it was an
wow.
otter. I got in my car and, you know, clocked it to the nearest freshwater pond. It's a half a mile. Now, this thing came a half a mile up my paved street, found my pond. I swear to God, they've all grouped together, these otters, and bought a drone, and they're scouring the neighborhood for fish. What on
wow.
earth?
Well, part of me goes, yay, it's an otter. I think that's so cool. Of course, if I had a fish pond, I would definitely not be that happy.
Well, I'm not sure how I, you know, prevent this from reoccurring. I want desperately to stock my pond, but
yeah.
I can't do that to my fish.
What I mean. I have seen some folks do who have koi ponds, and have had problems with raccoons, because raccoons will also catch fish. Is they use like a chicken wire. They just lay it over the top of the pond, assuming your pond isn't ginormous, and secure it down at the edges. And it may only have to be temporary until the otter decide they can't get anything there and go away. But it's worth a try.
Yeah.
Not very attractive.
It's not very attractive. But it works.
I purchased a motion sensor sprinkler. That is supposed to, like, if an animal comes in, it's supposed to shoot out, like, boo, 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 pulses of water.
I've seen those. I think an otter would think that was fun.
Well, I'll keep you posted.
Yeah. Christine, definitely keep us posted on that.
Yes.
Hopefully.
I'm telling you, the world is turned upside down.
Yes, it
sure
is.
Has. Thanks for sharing, Christine. We appreciate that. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. If you have any thoughts for Christine to keep that otter out, let us know. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening this morning with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626 for your gardening questions, comments, or stories. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I was wandering the garden and looking at some of the Siberian iris that I have, thinking, oh, it's time to divide those. Every few years, they start to die in the middle.
Yes.
Is now a good time, or should I wait till fall?
Well, you know my philosophy. The best time is when you have time. I would go ahead, and if they're really crowding out and other things and you need the space, I would go ahead and do it now. You may risk a little bit of the bloom. I just dug up a large clump and divided it and transplanted it in a totally different location last week. If you want to see them bloom, then I'd wait till fall.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I have I used to have these great big vegetable beds, and I've actually downsized, and so I have just two little beds for the vegetables. And I have one, and my grandson has the other one, who's 5, and he's so funny. We both planted peas. His peas are doing better than my peas. We planted the exact same thing, but his peas are a little bit taller than my peas. And he is so cute. He says the other day, "I need to go outside and talk to my peas." So this is his secret. He's talking
Oh, that's
to his peas, and
wonderful.
I am not talking to my peas. But he says, "I'm going to have prize-winning peas." I said, "Really? Who is judging this contest?" He said, "We will."
Oh, that is wonderful. I love that you're inculcating a love of gardening into him. I think that's just
Oh.
fabulous.
You know, it seems to come natural to him. He loves plant flowers of all kinds. He gets
Yeah.
very upset. You know, if you want to chop something down, he's like,
Well, you know, I learned gardening at the knee of my grandmother in her perennial garden when I was 5 years old. So I think when you become involved in gardening activities or nature activities, outdoor activities at a young age, I think it really sticks with you for the rest of your life. You may
I
leave it
think
at
so.
times, but you come back to it, and it just, I think it really is an important contribution to a young person's education about the natural world. So it
Yeah.
thrills me to see this happening.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting the things that you remember. I didn't start gardening until I was an adult, really. I mean, I had house plants, but I didn't outdoor garden. But I do remember as a kid in my grandfather's perennial garden. I don't even remember what the flower was, but I wanted to pick something, and I got the lecture of, well, if you picked that flower and brought it in inside, you would get to enjoy it. But if it stays outside, everyone who passes that flower gets to enjoy it. And I'm like, huh, something
That's
I
a
hadn't
nice philosophy. I like
thought
that.
of. Exactly. All right, so this time of year, everybody's wondering about their hydrangeas, and I know you get lots of questions in the spring. Should I, you know, prune them now? You know, I think I have a couple of hydrangeas that are doing okay, and the others, you know, still not so much. You know, got a lot of dead stems there on the top, and it's blooming on, you know, the leaves are coming out on the bottom. So, thoughts on hydrangeas?
Well, you know, I was very hopeful and very positive about hydrangeas this year because our winter was so mild. And then spring just stayed cold, and we had in April, late April, maybe it was early May, I don't remember the exact date, the leaves had come out. We had several nights where the temperatures dropped below freezing. It was 28 one morning here at my house in late April. And a couple of times it was right at the freezing mark. And in looking at my hydrangeas, I can see that the leaves that were out at that point have some damage on them. There are brown edges and they're slightly distorted, so they were damaged by that frost. What happened to the flower buds? I can't say. I suspect that where I had been very hopeful about a lot of flowers, maybe not so much now. We'll see. It's frankly a crapshoot. I have one very large hydrangea that I've loved for years, but it keeps getting whacked back in the winter. And now I look outside, and most of my hydrangeas have leafed out. They do look okay, except for the some frost damage. This one is still a collection of sticks, and you know what? I'm going to dig it up and get rid of it. You know, I've reached the point in my gardening life where, if I think as C.L. Fanari says, if you're not bringing anything to the party, it's time to leave.
I like that. I threatened last year to pull out these hydrangeas, and I just didn't get around to it. But the one that does seem to just do well, the lace cap ones seem to do much better.
I totally agree with you. My lace caps look okay. Particularly, there is a variety that came out a number of years ago that I'm absolutely in love with. It's called Tough Stuff. And there's a second one called Little Tough Stuff that is more of a dwarf. And these hydrangeas are lace caps, beautiful, beautiful flowers, and they are so reliable. I have never not had a beautiful display. So I sometimes get distracted by other beautiful hydrangeas and say, I have to have this. And I had one, I don't know, it was strawberry sundae, or it was not the vanilla strawberry peachy. It was one of the mop heads. And it's, you know, again, it flowered the year I planted it, and every year I keep cutting out dead stuff and no flowers. So that is also on my list to go. But these tough stuff, every year they're spectacular.
Right. When you were saying that, I was thinking of one that I have. I have actually two that, you know, that have the big white puffy, but they're more sturdy than, and I can't remember what the name of them is, but I had one in sort of the front of the garden, and it was getting pretty big. So last year I dug it up, cut it in half and moved it, and I was keeping my fingers crossed, and sure enough, green leaves. I'm so happy because
yes,
it's really
they
a beautiful
back.
Plant. Yeah, and I was worried I might have killed it with a, you know, kind of rough handling, but yeah.
It's surprising. We don't often think of dividing a hydrangea, but I have a couple of hydrangeas that I have are from friends who dug up an older plant and literally sawed it in half right through the root ball and gave me a big chunk, and I planted it, and it's fine. Doesn't bloom every year, but it's a variegated foliage, so it looks pretty anyway.
Right. Pat from Dennis has sent us a note. She says, I have a slug/hosta solution, which sounds a little old wives' tale and also homegrown by me. When corn season arrives, I take the cobs, break them in half, and hide them around the hostas, well hidden by those full leaves. When I return in the morning, there will always be slugs on them. Worth a try. All the best. Thank you, Pat, for that. That's a, you know, I don't know.
So you pick the slugs off the corn cobs?
I guess so, yeah. I've also heard you can put like a little thing, a little bowl of beer, and they'll go in there and drown. I don't know. I haven't tried that.
But, I have heard that too. Frankly, I'd rather drink my beer. I don't want to give it to the slugs. I have also heard, again, another sort of anecdotal, no science behind it, that potato peels in water will attract them. And my sister used to eat grapefruit every day, and she would take her rinds and turn them upside down into the garden and go out later the day and pick them up, and they'd be filled with slugs, and she'd just discard them.
Yeah.
So all sorts of little home recipes that are not, you know, scientifically based, but, you know, give it a try. It might
give
work.
It a try, right? Exactly. All right. So what are we looking at as far as pesky little bugs this time of year? Anything in particular we're having trouble with?
I have not seen hardly any winter moths this year.
Me either.
For which I am eternally grateful. have grapefruit on my mind now. I have seen lily leaf beetles. They are out, so you should be checking on that. It's still, because it's been such a chilly spring, I think a lot of the insect emergence has been slowed to a certain extent, but never stopped. Ticks are definitely out.
Oh, yeah.
So be sure to protect yourself and your pets. If you're working out in, like on the edge of the woods or in leafy or brushy areas, something I use is, it's called Repel for clothing and gear, and it contains permethrin, which is an insecticide, and you spray it on your shoes, you spray it on your out, you don't put it on your skin, this is not something for your skin, but it's the outer part of your clothing, and when I use that, I never find a single tick on me, so... I think it's worth an ounce of prevention. It lasts through a couple of washings, so you don't have to do it every time you go out. And it not only repels the ticks, if the ticks do get on the treated cloth, they're killed.
It kills them, yeah. And you can buy. I have two cans of just permethrin that I have one in my car and one in the house
Yep.
that you can use. You mentioned the lily leaf beetles, and it's interesting. I have planted so many more lilies because we've seen such a reduction in the population of the lily leaf beetles. And I've been walking around kind of looking for evidence of them, and I have not seen any yet, which I'm keeping my fingers crossed now that you say you've seen
Yeah.
them. But I really haven't seen any.
Well, they're way compared to how they were in the mid 90s when they first started appearing on the Cape, where basically you had to stop growing lilies.
Yeah.
So now they're more of an incidental pest rather than a major pest, and they're easily controlled by hand picking and squishing the larvae, if you don't mind doing that. I believe a Cap'n Jack spinosad will also control the larvae. It won't affect the adults. But yes, the introduction of a parasitic fly has greatly reduced the lily leaf beetle population.
And they're easy to spot. They're bright red.
Oh, they're beautiful. They're beautiful beetles.
They are a pretty bug, yeah. Right, Myra's giving us a call from Sandwich. Good morning, Myra.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Roberta. I have a question about three viburnum bushes that I've had in my yard. I did not plant them. They've been there probably 30 years. And for the last few years, when they start to bud and leaf out, one thing is a problem. The squirrels eat the buds, but I don't know that you can help me with that. But the problem they've been having is the leaves, as they start to bloom, curl. So many of the leaves will be tiny little curled, shriveled leaves, still green, and then others will be full leaves. And I really don't know what it is that would be causing it, and I'm contemplating having them all removed. They're all probably 8 to 9 feet tall.
Oh, big.
And yes, they are big, and as I say, they've been there probably 30 years.
Do you know what kind of viburnum they are?
I did, but I can't remember right now. I apologize.
What kind
They
of
have a
flower
white,
do they form?
it's a white flower, kind of rounded flower, and very few are coming out this year.
Yeah, it's like a big round ball.
Yes, I think that's
Yeah, that might be. There is. I don't know if it's an aphid or an adelgid. It's a small, white, fuzzy critter that feeds on the succulent new growth that is a pest of that particular type of viburnum, the Japanese snowball viburnum, Viburnum carlisii. And it can cause distortion of the foliage. It doesn't kill the plant, but it does make the foliage unsightly.
What do you do to get rid of them?
Well, you can use horticultural oil very early in the spring when the leaves are just breaking bud. I usually don't do anything. I'm willing to, I have limited amount of time for pest control in my life, so unless it's something that is glaringly horrible, I generally ignore it.
Yeah. Myra, sorry we could be more help. You're thinking about pulling them out, though?
I was considering removing them and replacing them, perhaps with the same type, and I think it is the Carlisia you mentioned.
Yes.
But I'm wondering if that's the case, if I were to do that, I would probably perhaps get the same problem again. So maybe
Yes, you
they're not
would.
going to
If you
pass.
want to replace them with a viburnum, my recommendation would be to look for the Shasta cultivar of double-file viburnum. It doesn't form the round ball. It's more of a flat, white lace cap type flower. But the plant itself has beautiful structure. It has horizontal branching as it develops. The Mariesii cultivar gets quite large, but Shasta will only get to be about 5 feet by maybe 5 or 6 feet, 5 feet tall by about 5, 6 feet wide, and it does not get this pest problem.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Myra,
wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening with Roberta Clark. Our number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Anna is giving us a call from Edgartown. Hi, Anna.
Hi. Hi. How are you? I love your show. I live for it every Friday whenever she's on. But I just want to tell you, I decided to plant just a few tomatoes and cucumbers and pickled cucumbers, of course, and put them on my upper terrace porch. I have a very small cottage, but I have one of those porches upstairs to avoid the bunnies and the what do you think of that? Do you think it's going to survive? I get full sun up there, and I can water them, and I got big pots.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I think they'd be fine. The thing you're going to need to pay attention to is watering, because if they're in a container and they're in full sun, the containers dry out very quickly. So you need to pay attention to making sure they don't go dry. Cucumbers are like 98% water.
Right.
They go dry, they become slightly deformed, but also sometimes they become bitter. So just pay attention to watering, and you should have a great crop.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. I have one more question.
Sure.
And am I taking over? I just don't want to take over somebody else.
No, you're fine. Go ahead. Nope.
Okay. Well, I want to do. Okay, we have this rather unsightly front area, and so I wanted to plant hedges. And I talked to a guy about planting, and he said, "Oh, I only do privets." And I said, I don't want privets. I want like boxwoods or something. What do you think about something that will be really hardy and look nice and kind of take root? I'm figuring I'll pay, you know, the price for decent sized boxwoods. But what do you think? What should I put? You know, the vineyard.
Yeah,
so, you know.
Boxwood hedge is lovely, but boxwood has a number of pest problems. It has a disease called Volutella blight that can be quite problematic. So it also has a couple of different insect problems, which, while not life-threatening, can make the boxwood fairly unsightly. If you like the look of boxwood, a good substitute that has fewer, not none, but fewer pest problems is Japanese holly. And there's a lot of dwarf varieties that stay very compact. They can be upright. Some varieties are upright. Some varieties are spreading. You know, visit your favorite garden center on the island and talk to someone in the nursery department about what different cultivars of Japanese holly are available. Go that way. Boxwood's beautiful. Another major drawback, when it does smell like cat pee.
It does. It smells terrible.
Yeah, it does.
But it is prone to both disease and insect pests, so I think the Japanese holly would be a better substitute.
Yeah. Anna,
okay,
good luck.
One quick. Yeah, thank you so much. Take care.
Yeah.
Keep it up.
Okay,
bye-bye.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Lee writes, I now have 8 raised beds, and I do mean raised. Their legs are on the ground, but the bottom of each bed is nearly a foot off the ground. So she's not getting any of those bunnies.
Right, exactly.
I love gardening standing up. I would love to. That is a great idea. They could be kind of pricey if you don't know how to make them yourself. I would love to have beds like that. Yeah. Let's see. And Ariane writes, I have used the beer in a shallow saucer type thing for slugs for over a decade, and it really does work. You can use cheap beer. They aren't picky. I used to just dump it in a back corner of one of my beds along the fence, compost, then refill. You usually don't have to do it for long. And yes, it's a bit gross when it works.
It does work. I will agree.
Yeah. And then Stephen writes, there's a mountain laurel growing at the edge of a garden I'm planting. The leaves have all brown spots on them. Could this problem spread to the garden plants? Should I remove them?
No. Mountain laurel is prone to leaf spot. particularly if it's in full sun, because it's actually more of a dappled shade, morning sun, afternoon shade type of a plant. I suspect the brown spots are on the older leaves, which may fall off, and the new growth will come out looking lovely. Mountain laurel is a gorgeous plant, and we don't see that much of it on the Cape. It does get big. If you drive down through parts of Connecticut, it grows. It's a native plant. It grows wild and is just gorgeous when it's in bloom. I really like mountain laurel, and there are there's a whole series of they're called the little leaf mountain laurels, and they tend to not grow as large as straight mountain laurel. So if you're looking for a lovely little, it's an evergreen, broadleafed evergreen, with beautiful flowers and nice foliage the rest of the year, the little leaf laurels are lovely, and they are available at local garden centers.
Oh, good to know. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Okay, so I've seen my first mosquito, and, you know, I would love it if we didn't have those little critters, but we do. So probably a good time to walk around the yard and find any standing water, right?
Yes, yes. And you'd be surprised how little water it takes for mosquitoes to breed in. So if you're sort of like me and you have an area of your yard where you keep all your containers and trays and things like that, that frequently water collects in these. So go out there and empty them out and just try to avoid a lot of standing water or even small amounts of standing water. Also, make sure you're giving your pets their heartworm medication. That was a good reminder. I haven't seen a mosquito yet, so I haven't thought about that. But now that you've mentioned it, it's time to start that up.
Yeah, I've seen one, just one.
Just one.
But
that's all you
need.
Yeah,
just one so far. Exactly, yeah. Are there plants, you know, I see sometimes in my little garden catalogs, I say, repels mosquitoes. Is there such a thing? Are there plants that actually? No, yeah, that was my thought, I thought.
I mean, citronella geraniums are lovely, and I love the smell of them. They do smell like citronella, but, you know, you'd have to have like 50,000 plants all in one area to discourage mosquitoes. So, no, they don't work.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Cynthia wants to know, is it too early to plant basil and tarragon?
I said I planted my tomatoes. I haven't put my basil in yet, but I probably will over the weekend. You know, Memorial Day is sort of our traditional go, you know, in the garden. Get all that stuff in, your zucchini, your cukes, your basil, your herbs. So I would say we're probably fine. Overnight temperatures for the next 10 days look to be in the upper 40s to low 50s, and that's fine. And the daytime temperatures really look to be hopefully moderating, so we're having 60s, upper 60s to low 70s, which is my favorite temperature range, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm, me too.
So yes, I'm planning over the next week as I have time to completely plant my seven raised beds, and then I can concentrate on the weeds in my perennial border.
Yeah, being home, I got the weeds out of my perennials, but of course I start at one end, go to the other. Now I got to start again because
you've got
more weeds. Yeah, exactly. And I love the dahlias, and for years I had a number of dahlias, and a couple years ago I said, you know, I lost them. I tried a new process for overwintering, and it didn't work. And so I said, you know what? I'm not going to do the dahlias anymore. Yeah, digging them up in the fall. And of course, last year, somebody gave me, you know, five or six dahlias, and I got a few more. So I'm back to the dahlias. But I, you know, it's like a disease, right? It's like I just cannot help myself.
Well, it is. It's very funny. I ventured down to Rhode Island last Monday to socially distance see my sister, and we exchanged sourdough starter, which is a big thing now. Believe me, that's almost as addictive as plants. You start off with one jar, and next thing you know, you're feeding like half a dozen jars of starter on your shelf. The bread's fabulous, though. But she had been with her daughter to a local garden center in Tiverton, and she had bought the most magnificent dahlia I've seen. The flower was just dark red, totally streaked with white. It was just spectacular. And
I have
almost drove down to the garden center to buy it and then said, no, don't do it. And I was proud of myself. I came home.
I have that one, Roberta.
Oh, no.
You know, I planted this. Yeah, I know, right? I have this lovely maple tree that we planted, maybe 6 years ago now, something like that. And I don't remember what kind it is, but it's one that doesn't grow more than like 10 or 15 feet. I think it's about 12 feet tall. And it has the nice yellow leaves in the spring. They turn green and then orange in the fall.
Beautiful.
And I have not touched it. I haven't, you know, pruned a branch until I noticed the very center, the branches in the very center were, you know, no leaves, dead. So I cut them out.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine why that happened.
Well, it could be if it's growing very well, it may be that those branches were these smaller branches.
No, one of them was a main center branch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get a lot of it's little branches and you have a heavy crown. They're shaded out and eventually just die. Did you see any signs of canker on the stem you pruned out?
No. I wondered if it was just,
And just keep an eye on it.
Yeah. I'm hoping that no more die off.
Right.
Marilyn in Chatham writes, we have a row of five green mountain boxwoods planted a few years ago. This spring, we noticed chickadees all over them, eating something off them. But we also noticed the leaves, especially on the side facing east, yellowing and drying out. Any thoughts of what is causing this?
It could be, without seeing it, I'd only be guessing, but it could be some scald boxwood. Sometimes when they start coming out of dormancy and we have cold temperature like we did in April, it could be just some scald. Could be boxwood psyllid, which is an insect that the chickadees would eat. I'd look more closely at it. The one thing about boxwood, sometimes you can prune out the damage and new growth will fill in that area. So I'd just go and give it a good close-up examination.
So all the heat-loving plants, we're okay to start planting them now, right?
Well, it's like if you want a garden this year, you got to plant it. You know, if we wait till July, we'll be harvesting in September. So I'm going to chance it this weekend. Everything's going to go in, my zucchini, cukes, basil. I already have a lot of my herbs in. I don't have my tarragon in yet. But yes, it's like time to go for it. Soil temperature actually is above 60, surprisingly, because soil is dark and absorbs the energy from the sun. So it does tend to warm up and sometimes be warmer than the atmosphere. I'm planting my green beans once I get the fence up. Otherwise, I planted them three times last year and the rabbits ate them every time. So my big goal this year is to have a rabbit-free garden. I know.
Your advice is go for it, right? And, you know, we opened the pool early this year because we had to put in a new pool liner. And with the solar cover, my pool's already up to 72 degrees. My grandson's already been in swimming.
How fabulous.
Cold for me. Cold for me, but not too cold for him.
Chilly for me.
Yeah, a little chilly still.
Plus, I'm in quarantine. I'm not sure I'm getting in a bathing suit anytime soon.
I think we are all in the same boat there. Roberta Clark joins us once a month to talk gardening. Roberta, thanks for being with us this morning.
My pleasure.
For your gardening advice. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.